All right, guys, there are two reasons why I'm excited about today's Share Calling topic. Number one, one of the things I enjoy doing is when we have a practice, a halachic practice we do all the time, we have no idea why we're doing it, and then we discover what the background is. So I think most of us grew up washing our hands before eating bread with no understanding of what that's about. So we will get some understanding today, which I think will make us appreciate it more. And it's often good, I think, also to get exposure to a world of Torah that we don't really know. And I think most of us don't really get exposed that often to the rules of Tumah V'Tahara, ritual purity. We don't really practice most of them, okay, except for Joseph Kahn. Okay, and so at that point, it's nice to get some sense of what happens in that world. So let me just give you two pieces of brief background about that world, and then we'll get down to business here. Okay, so in Tumah, of course, we have gradations. So we have a source of Tumah, and then the source of Tumah causes Tumah to something else. It is Mitami something else. What's the usual halakhic phrase for the original source of Tumah? We call it an Ava Tumah, right? It's the father. It's the paradigm. Okay, then when the Ava Tumah contacts something, that something usually becomes a Rishon L'Tumah. It is the first stage. Okay, now things get more lenient as you go along. Tumah is not an endless chain. I mean, there's no such thing. If anyone ever walked in the Beit Midrash and says, guess what? I am a 17th level of Tumah. Okay, what should you say to them? That's not a thing. That is not a thing. Okay, there's no such thing. Okay, there are a lot of limitations how far it could go. For example, a human being, if an Av touches a human being, the human being does indeed become a Rishon. But if a Rishon touches a human being, he does not become a Sheni. Inherently, there's really no such thing as a human being being a Sheni. Human beings can only be Av or Rishon. Food can be a Sheni. Okay? Other thing to realize, even food, most food, can't be a Shlishi. Okay? Your regular apple, run-of-the-mill apple, could be a Sheni, not a Shlishi. When's the only time Shlishi comes into play? For Truma or Kodesh. Okay? Somehow, the more Kodesh something is, the more susceptible to Truma it might be, which is an interesting question for us, not right now. Just think about it from a Machshava perspective, why that is. So once I'm in the world of Sheni, the only thing a Sheni can really affect is Truma or Kodesh. What would that mean? If I do have a Sheni lurking somewhere, I would want to keep it away from Truma. Because what could happen? If my Sheni contacts Truma, it actually ruins the Truma. We use the term puzzle. Truma is not meant to become Tamei. If it becomes Tamei, it's a problem. Okay, everyone got the back on there? So we've got, again, Av, Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi. Just very briefly, what could a human being be? Av and Rishon. Okay, what could regular food be? Rishon and Sheni. Who could be Shlishi? Only Truma and Kodesh. Okay, guys, now you could, next time you're on a bus, you can impress your the local Talmud Chacham on the bus. You know your details of Tumah V'Tahara. Okay, great. With that background, let us go to Gemara and Shabbat. Now, they made a number of gzeirot having to do with Tumah V'Tahara. The first one is actually not our topic, but it's quite fascinating. I can't resist. One of the amazing gzeirot they made is that holy scriptures are a source of Tumah, which again, we think that's a funny thing to do, to associate, meaning let's say I've got a scroll of Sefer Shmuel in front of me. What was the gzeirah? That scroll is a source of Tumah. Now, it's to such an extent, you guys will love this, what does it say in Masechet Megillah? Masechet Megillah is discussing the status of certain svarim. It's almost like, are they part of the canon or not? Because anyone think of some svarim that might be a little debatable, should they be part of the canon or not? Okay, Esther, Shir HaShirim, Kohelet. It's a very fascinating Gemara Megillah, I think Dav Zion, which is trying to figure out, are they part of the canon? Okay, but how does the Gemara phrase it? It doesn't say, is Kohelet part of Tanakh? What's the Gemara's phrase? Anyone know? Is, very good, who said that? Oh, that was good. Michael, how do you know that? See, Michael, he doesn't only do the Hebrew language, he also does Aramaic. Very exciting. Okay, it says there, is Kohelet Mitame Yadayim. But it's amazing, what does it really mean, is Kohelet Mitame Yadayim? Does Kohelet have the status of a regular Sefer of Tanakh, and then would be subject to this Gezerah? So it's a fascinating thing there. If the Gemara says, is ex Mitame Yadayim, that's actually a sign of the greatness of the work. Is it part of Scripture to the extent that it is part of this Gezerah and causes Tumah? Yeah. Okay, very good. We'll get there in a second. I will just point out, Ari Portal made an interesting assumption. Ari assumed that Tuma is metaphysical. Okay, I think he is right according to many Rishonim. I think if you read the Rambam has a distinctly non-metaphysical take on Tuma, both in the Mishnah Torah and in Mor Nebuchim. Okay, so those of you who would like to minimize your metaphysics, you could speak to me about the Rambam's take on Tuma. Okay? If you'd like to maximize your metaphysics, don't go with Rambam. Okay, Isaac, we know you'd like to maximize your metaphysics. Yes?
Doesn't the Shlishi paradigm kind of explain why, like, about how important
it is,
like,
important to Tuma? Yeah, no, I think you're onto something. Okay? Okay, great. So let's see the Gemara. Now, why did they do this? So says the Gemara in Shabbat, V'sefer ma'atam ha'gazim ribon ha'tumah. Why in the world would they make Kidvei HaKodesh a source of Tumah? Amar M'shashah shebetchila, those Jews, they have funny practices. What were they doing? Hayu matznian et ochlin detrumah eitzel sefer Torah. Okay, great verb to know, guys. What's matznian? They would hide or store. What word does it remind you of? Tzniut, right? Something private, something hidden. So they would say, we've got these truma apples. We love our truma apples. Where should we keep them? We're not going to keep them in the regular apple bowl. They're truma. Oh, you know where we'll keep them? We'll keep them in the Torah scrolls. Now, I admit, most of us would not think that, but what were they thinking? Vamu hai kodesh vai kodesh. They said, it's most appropriate. Where would you keep something holy? Something else holy. So let's wrap them up in Sefer Yechezkel. If someone wants an apple, Cohen could realize, I'd like a true apple. Oh, just open up Sefer Yechezkel. There's one lurking in Perchavav. Right, there you go. Okay. So now, but apparently that was not a good idea. Kevin de Kachazu de Katuli de Pseida. What do you guys think? What's going to happen at that point? It's going to ruin the scrolls. Anyone tell me specifically what might happen? It might attract rodents. Right? Not a good idea to keep food there. Okay, so we thought that was a bad move. Right, so they want to discourage people from doing that. What they say? Gazru be rabbanan tuma. Now notice what's happening. This gets to Ari's point. Something very fascinating. The rabbis are using tuma categories to try to accomplish other things. Because what they say, biblically, there's no reason why Kitvei HaKodesh is tuma. It's not a source of tuma in the slightest. But what were the rabbis trying to accomplish? If we declare it a source of tuma, no one's going to keep their truma in the scrolls. Because you're trying to keep truma away from becoming tuma. So it was a means of protecting. Got that? It was a means of dissuading this truma practice. Why they decide that Kitvei HaKodesh are a source of tuma? To dissuade people from keeping truma there. But it still emerges that a measure of a work sanctity will now be, is it a source of tuma? I forgot that that's not my topic at all, but that's very fascinating. Just file that aside for your general Jewish knowledge. Okay, next. Now, apparently they also made a gzera about yadayim, that yadayim are a source of tuma, not just kitvei HaKodesh. V'hai yadayim, why'd they make that gzera? Mifnei shehi yadayim askaniyot heim. What's to be askaniyot? Busy, right? To be asuk. Right, someone called, you ask an Israeli, are you free to go to the movie with me? He says, ani asuk midai. What's ani asuk midai? I'm too busy. Okay, so what's the claim? Hands are busy. Now, what would that mean, hands are busy? Zach? Okay, they touch things, right? Hands are busy touching things. Maybe they touch things that are somehow problematic. So let's plug it out. Let's take it one step further. What do hands touch that make us nervous? Again, there was a gzera. We discussed the gzera of Kitvei HaKodesh. We're now up to the gzera of Yadayim. They made a gzera by Yadayim because hands touch things. Well, what things do they touch? So here there's a great machloket in Rashi. This is a very exciting machloket. Here you go. Let's look at Rashi in Source 2. I hope you guys all got the difference here. Askan Yodhein, V'nogin Bibsaro, Uvimakam Tinofet. According to Rashi's first approach, what are we touching? Yeah, what's the point? Things that are sweaty, things that are dirty. It's much more aesthetic, right? Oh, yeah, who knows what you touched? You had your hands in your shirt, now your hands are all sweaty. Right, you touched some dirty thing on the floor. That's what we're nervous about. Okay, and therefore what? So what? V'gnai l'truma b'kach. What's the problem based on that? It's a disgrace, but notice it's all in the world of like respect and aesthetics. That's what's going on. Wouldn't it be really not so, if you want to treat truma as something of respect, it would be a little bit funny, oh, I'll get my hand all sweaty and then I'll pick up the truma apple. We don't want that to happen. So what did we declare, apparently? We declared that hands are tummy. Now, there's one thing I admit I made a mistake. I should have filled it in. So how do you solve the problem? So apparently you could remove the tum of your hands by what? By washing them. Okay, I should have thrown that in. I'm sorry, there's no source that says that. But now, but notice, according to Rashi, once again, I think it's something amazing. What? And here I hinted that in the question. Sometimes there's a difference between what motivated something and how the Chachamim chose to categorize it. According to the first approach in Rashi, what's really going on here? Is it really a tum of atar idea or not really at all? Not at all. Really, what did the rabbis want? They wanted people to treat truma respectfully. Doing it with sweaty/dirty hands is not respectful. They wanted Jews to wash their hands before eating truma, or Kohanim to wash their hands before eating truma. But, that's good. That's the motivation. But what mechanism did they use? What categories did they use? Ever see that? So here, is that interesting? We're using, maybe it's not metaphysical at all here. We're using Tumah V'Tahara categories to try to accomplish a respect for Truma. Right? We're going to tell your hands are a Sheni L'Tumah. What's that going to force you to do? Wash them before eating Truma. We accomplished our goal. So we're using Truma. I think it's very interesting. We're using Tumah V'Tahara categories to accomplish a different goal. Give me 1 second, guys. Let's go to Rashi's second shot. V'Rabotenu Mefarshim, but our rabbis explained, right, Rashi's rabbis, Chayshinim Shemen Nagu Yada Betuma V'Nitma. Now this is the most fascinating thing. Says the other pshat, nothing doing. When we said your hands are busy, it's not that they're busy touching sweaty parts of the body. They're busy, and they might be touching tummy things. Now there is an advantage of Rabotenu. Some of you might not like the idea I just said. The idea that it's really about aesthetics and respect, and we're just using Tumah V'Tahara categories. Some of you might be bothered by that. A bit of Kodra Rabotenu, we're using Tumah V'Tahara categories because it's really about Tumah V'Tahara. It's not dirt that you're going to touch, it's Tumah you're going to touch. So that's the major advantage of that approach. But we're now going to see an incredible disadvantage of that approach. Let's see the disadvantage. V'kashuli, imke necho shemenaga ba'avatum v'nimsa rishon v'yitmena. Wait, I mentioned to you before that we treat the hands as a sheni. If we're really afraid you touch Tumah, maybe you became a Rishon. What if you touched a Nevela, or a Sheretz, or a Tameh Mate? If you came into contact with an Av, you should be a Rishon. Even worse, the old Maishna Yadayim L'chudayu, B'chol Gufo Nigzal L'fsol Truma, Shemun Haga Yudah B'tumah V'nimah Kol Gufo. Now comes perhaps the most fundamental point, guys. We have this idea, we made a gzeira that your hands are a source of tumah. But how does biblical tumah work? Biblical tumah, guys, is a full-bodied experience. There's no such thing, my right elbow is tumah, the rest of me is tahar. Right? It does not work that way. There is no biblical tumah where that concept exists. Either you're tumah or you're tahar. It is about your total identity. It doesn't matter which part of my body came into contact with it. Right? So if we are... Why is that a big advantage to Rashi's first approach? Because if you're in Rashi's second approach, we're really afraid of tumah, what should happen? We should say, your whole body's tumah. And as Rashi goes on to say, we shouldn't tell you wash your hands, we should tell you go to the mikvah. What if I like Rashi's first shot, why is it better? It wasn't really about tumah v'tahara to begin with. We're just using those categories because they're convenient and we want to get you to wash your hands. You know what? Maybe at that point we want to make up some new entity. We made up something. What do we make up? Only your hands are tummy. Okay, well, now I'm going to take comments. Make sure I've got those 2%. They're quite important. Again, we're saying now, why did they make an exam about hands? They wanted people to wash their hands before they eat truma. They said, it's not good. Now, but why? First shot, because hands are busy. First shot in Rashi, what are they busy with? Dirt, sweat, etc. Namely, it's really not Tumah V'Tahara. Tumah V'Tahara is just a means we're using to accomplish something else. Second pshat in Rashi from his rabbis, we're genuinely afraid that you're touching Tumah. Last thing, guys, tell me the advantage of Rashi and the advantage of his rabbis. Well, why do the rabbis like their pshat better? Well, we're using Tumah V'Tahara categories because it's actually about Tumah V'Tahara. It's not some artificial mechanism. Of course, what's the flip side? What's the huge advantage of Rashi himself? Then the rules make sense. If we're really afraid of your tummy, the rules make no sense. It should be your whole body. You should be a Rishon with Tumah. We should make you go to the mikvah. Okay, now comments and questions. Yeah. All right.
But why, like, if it's a clear why do you have to use the mechanism to recover? Why can't you say there's an error that you have to watch before you eat bread? Without giving that reason.
Okay, that is a very good question. Anyone try to answer Ari's question from a practical perspective? Yeah, maybe it's a motivational question. Sometimes you're making zayud, you have to ask what's going to motivate the masses. Maybe tumma was a stronger motivation for them than just telling you you have to wash your hands.
But it plays into my original question about the construct of being able to say, like, oh,
he's manipulating. Okay, so I did point out, it could be the reason why Rabotenu didn't like Rashi, because they just didn't like the idea that we're going to use an artificial construct when it's not what it's really about. Okay, I think this is a very interesting educational question here. Okay, I would say it's like you can even have it today in some level. If we think categorized X is going to be more effective, should we do that even if it doesn't really apply? Right? Is that a legitimate move or not? So maybe that's part of the debate right here. Right? Maybe it was going to be more effective to use Tumma Vatara terminology, even if that's not what it's really about. Yeah?
I just want to point out that following this religious logic would be proven. Anybody who thinks it's a good idea to store produce in Sefer Torah is going to decide just put the Sefer Torah in the mikvah and then put it in the
Wait, it's quite creative, but why does that follow?
I'm saying that you can get if it's tame and you can get rid of it, the tuma by washing it, then the same guy who thinks it's a good idea to put this in your sacred toilet, like there's no reason not to wash his toilet.
I guess we're going to count on people being able to make that distinction. That you can get rid of your hands tumma by washing them, but you can't get rid of Sefer Yechezkel's tumma by washing it. Yeah, we're just going to have to count on people thinking that, okay? It's true, there might be those couple of fellows who are going to make that mistake, but they'll just have to deal with the implications. Okay, yeah. Daniel.
When he says storing produce in the
Kasei
Kodesh, does it actually mean inside the scrolls?
I think so.
It's not in the Aron Kodesh?
Oh, no, I think in the scroll itself.
They wrapped it up.
Oh, that's a good question. You're saying I can't prove it. Like, just curious, why would it matter, though, which way it is? You want to tell me they stored it next to the scrolls?
Yeah, like if they would put
it... Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. What would that change, though?
I feel like for Noam's question, like then you don't really have to put the maybe in the mikvah. Maybe you don't have to store it in the mikvah.
I think even according to my approach, I don't get to put the scrolls in the mikvah. Okay? Okay, we're good? Yeah, Josh. Can I just make one point? Just one thing. Ari, isn't this what you just said? I think even with the safe, you get the same thing about what's the most effective method. Because you could still ask me the same question. Why didn't the rabbis just get up and say, it's usher to store your truma with Torah scrolls? What if somehow it's more effective to say, Torah scrolls could be a source of truma?
How can you just like make something up like that that's effective? Like, the answer to the question of whether truma is better than physical was like, oh, here's an example.
Ari, maybe you're just anti-rabbinic creativity. I would say, let me be fair to Ari, he's asking a good question. Even if Tumah is metaphysical, maybe rabbinic Tumah is not metaphysical. Is that fair? Okay, I'm going to get on to 7. Can we do a little lumdish tangent for 1 second, you guys okay?
Yeah.
Okay, if you don't like lumdish, guys, I'm going to go to sleep next 30 seconds. If you like lumdish, stay awake. Okay, here we go. There is a famous question in life. Okay, Isaac, you have to wake up, it's lumdish. Okay, here we go. Are Isurim, here's the phrase, guys. Are prohibitions what's called Isure Gavra or Isure Chefza? Are they an Isur on the person or an Isur on the item? Now, to try to clarify that means in a less abstract fashion, what would that mean? What's an Isur Chefza? That there's something about the item that it's inherently problematic. It's like the item is objectively bad, right? Maybe it's one way to think about pork. Pork is an Isur Chefza. Right, it's got the evil force of the universe are gathered within it. Okay, what it would be an Isur Gavra? An Isur Gavra is saying, oh, that item, it's a perfectly great item. There's nothing wrong with it. It happens to be that I'm not supposed to eat it. I'm not making any grand claim about the item. Does everyone understand that basic distinction? Now, I'll give you an example where it might come into play. Now, you might say, all the Isurei of the Torah should be Isurei Chefza. What if we'll do a real example. Let us say, you guys go help me out here. Let's say Rabbi Blau has gotten too chubby now that he's 51, and he really shouldn't be noshing at all. Okay, so all that's true. Okay, so now, but it's okay, life's still enjoyable even when you're chubby. Okay, maybe it's more enjoyable actually. Okay, so now, let's say I make an oath not to eat any cheesecake. Okay, so now I've got an Isser on myself to eat cheesecake. What do you guys think? What kind of Isser is that? There's nothing inherent about it. The Torah wasn't against cheesecake consumption. I, for my own personal needs, made this oath. So you could say that that would be classic Isser Gavra or not. Isser Chefzer. Am I still with me? Okay, one more second, guys. What about if I asked you about Doraitas versus Darabanans? Now it's got really interesting, right? What might someone say? In theory, every Isser Doraita is Isser Chefzer, right? The Torah clarifies kind of the objective status of foodstuff in the world. But when the Rabbanim come along and create Isurim, maybe the rabbis can't change things on that grand cosmic level. What's the only thing they could do? They could tell you as an individual not to eat it. Right? Are you with me? Wouldn't that be a parallel? So maybe in the world of Machalot Asurot, the writers are Isurim Chefza and the Rabbanim are Isurim Gavra. But what if I say the same about Tumah? Tumah Doraitas are part of the metaphysical fabric of the universe. Tumah Darabanans are just a mode of practice to try to accomplish certain things.
There's a big jump between like the Isser Chatzah and saying it's like a metaphysical reality.
Okay. Okay, I thought it was a pretty good analogy, but okay. You don't like it, it's okay. It's okay? I like it when Abed agrees with me. Okay, we're good with that? Yeah, Tani.
What's Rosh's approach then? If you were Tumah, but you washed your hands and they were clean
and
everything, would you then be allowed to touch the
chimney? Okay, no. Okay, if I was really, again, because according to Rashi, what's the problem? What if I'm really tummy? What's the problem if I'm really tummy? Yeah, washing hands doesn't do it. If I'm really tummy, I need to go to the mikvah. But that's exactly why Rashi rejects his rabbis.
Doesn't he say it's not about being tummy?
No, that's why Rashi's great. What does Rashi claim? I'm not afraid that I touched tummah. What did it mean, the business of the hands? It meant that I touched something gross, sweat, dirt, and therefore washing hands does solve my problem because I'm not actually tummy.
Even if you wouldn't need to tell your diet at all,
we're going to get there in a minute. Okay, next. Ready, guys? Now, all this, Aaron, give me 2 minutes, actually. All this was in the world of Truma. Because remember, we said that a shady can only affect Shlishi. Okay? And in fact, in theory, by the way, if I'm eating chulin, again, what's chulin? Non-Kodesh food. It doesn't matter if it becomes tummy. Right now, my apple, today's lunch, if it's tummy, life goes on. You could just eat it. It's perfectly fine. So how did we get to where we wash hands for chulin? Have we got the jump now? We just explained why you wash hands for truma. Now, because the hands are busy, etc. Why do you wash hands for chulin? Okay, source 4. I'm of Edi Brevin Ravitz Barashian. Netila Yadayim L'chulin Mifnei Tzrach Truma. What's it actually about? It's about an extension of Truma. It's almost to keep people in practice for Truma eating. So it's pretty amazing. Why does all of Am Yisrael wash their hands before eating bread? Even though we're not Kohanim, even though we're not eating Truma, it is kind of keeping in Truma practice, extending the Truma idea. Okay, now look in Rashi, source 5. Netil yadayim l'chul m'mei srach chuma. Hutzrichu sheyadayim shniot. What are hands? They are sheni. Who postled in a chuma. Therefore, they invalidate chuma. Of a chulin, lo mahani bu sheni. Chulin, really, sheni shouldn't affect it. Right, hands should have no impact on chulin. U'mifnei srach chuma, here it is. Sheyagilu ochle chuma litol yadayim. Yargilu, in modern Hebrew, guys, what is a targil? No, not a ton of gold. Okay. Targil is a practice or a drill, right, to get used to. Think of the word regular, right? That is a targil. Okay, so now, what's the first approach, guys? Why do we wash our hands for chulin? It is actually keeping in practice for our truma, and for whatever reason, we seem to pick bread as the thing we do it for. Okay, so first approach, we wash our hands for chulin as a practice for truma. Okay, next. The only shum, I'm back in the Gemara, the only shum mitzvah. We also do it for a mitzvah. My mitzvah. Amar baya mitzvah l'shmo adivei chachamim. Now that is very murky and a difficult thing to understand. What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah to listen to the rabbis. But if the rabbis only told you to do it because of srach truma, this doesn't seem to be a separate Everybody's reading this point? Is there like a separate reason here? If I say, oh, do it for Srach Truma and to listen to the rabbis. Okay, but the rabbis told you to do it because of Srach Truma. So you look in Tosfos, Tos is not happy. Says Tos in Surah 6. I don't see any second element here. What's the claim? Chumras. So Tos would like to argue that there's the Srach Truma approach and there is the Nikir approach. So we already read of two themes. We're going to see in a second that there might be a third theme. Okay, let me just do the third theme and then I'll take questions. Now we go to the Gemara and Bracha. It's always good to put all of Shas together. Again, Chulin said, just review again, what did Chulin say? Why do I wash my hands before eating my corned beef sandwich? A, Srach Truma. B, Mitzvah L'shmar D'Rei Chachamim. How did Tosfos plug that in? That was a way of saying Nikir. Okay, here we go. Says the Gemara and Bracha. Tanu Rabbanan, Shemen Ma'akev et HaBracha. If I don't clean my hands with oil, Ma'akev et HaBracha, it holds back the bracha. I can't bench. Divi Rabbi, or I can't make a bracha Rishona maybe. Divi Rabbi Zivai. Rabbi Zivai Omer Einu Ma'akev. It doesn't hold you back. Rabbi Ach Omer Shemen Tov Ma'akev. Good oil holds you back. Rabbi Zumai Omer. But have you noticed anything about these names? Yeah, these are names that carefully, they got named based on the halacha, right? What does Zumai actually mean? Yeah, yeah. Presuming this was not his nickname. Poor guy. The filthy rabbi. Okay, Rabbi Zumai. Kishem Shem Zuham Pasula Avodah. Just like being filthy invalidates you for our temple service, kach yadayim mizuamot psulot lebracha. So too, filthy hands makes you invalid to say bracha. Fine. Amar Nachman Yitzchak ana lo zilai lo zivai lo zuma yadana elamanina yadana. I could just quote sources. Damir Rav elamanita tana vidkadashtem elumayim rishonim. V'yitim k'doshim, elu ma'am ha'chonim, ki kadosh zeh shemen, ani yishim okechem, zu bracha. Ah, now in theory we have a third theme. Where does the Gemara Brachot seem to derive, again, ma'am rishonim, which washing is ma'am rishonim? The washing of hands before the meal. Okay, where does it seem to derive it from? From a pasuk that says? Ah, so if I ask you which value is being serviced by washing your hands, what does it sound like? Kedusha. Kedusha is not the same as cleanliness. Okay, so now in theory, I'll take comments in 1 second, we have three potential themes. And often, which theme is dominant, which theme has which implications. Again, what did Chulin say? Washing hands before bed is practice for Truma, Srach Truma, and according to Tosfos, is also Nikiyot. What did one Brachot seem to say? It is a fulfillment of the Kedusha theme. Right? I have a sense, I want to create an air of sanctity. Right, think about it. I think the Kohanim and the Avodah is a good way of thinking about it. Kohanim going to the Avodah, what makes it seem like something sanctified, something of reverence is going on? Washing hands. And I want, guys, realize the emphasis? Is it relevant whether Kohanim's hands are dirty or not? No, not at all. Because I'm not saying, oh, it's not respectful to have dirty hands. I'm saying, oh, you want to do something sanctified? Right, the best thing to do is wash your hands first. That creates the air of sanctity. So Kedusha is different than Nikiyot. Okay, Jacob Rockman, is he still back there? What did you want to say before? I never got to you. Okay, yeah, David. Ah, excellent. Very good. Why is that a problem?
Because this whole thing sounds...
You might have a great vote. You could put that in your sefer. Okay, you could say this. What are the three themes? Nikiyot, Tara, and Kedusha. Those are three different things. Ah, so now we get to a great question about Shas, guys. Here's a very interesting question. How much effort should I make to try to reconcile the totality of Shas? Right, I've got Gemara and Chulin that has certain themes. I've got a Gemara and Brachot that has different themes. So maybe I should just live with that. I got my Chulin theme and I got my Brachot theme. Or should I try somehow? No, I'm going to find a way to integrate them. I must make Chulin and Brachot fit together hand in glove. So to give you one example of that before I get to more comments, everyone please go to the Rashba source 9. Okay, because the Rashba wants to know, guys, I saw him need so many sources today, just they were too interesting, I couldn't stop. Okay? It was just too good. Okay. Look at the Rashba in source 9. Okay, he wants to know, why doesn't Chulin bring up? What should Chulin bring up? Which theme? Kedusha. Umihu tema ki kami my mitzvah a milo amalei mivit kadashim ki ita bebrachot. When the chulin's looking for a theme, it could have just jumped to the kedusha theme. Look what he does. The yesh lomer dehatan limevarech umishum bracha aval hamesubin haonim. So that is a really interesting reconciliation. According to the Rashba, why is the brachot theme limited? What's his claim?
It only affects the person.
Is it interesting? Apparently in the old days, it's like you Sfardim, right? Harry Portel, like you Sfardim. What does Sfardim love to do? Where's Jordan? Okay, they love communal recitals, right? The Chazan just keeps talking through all Pesukah de Zimra, right? Unlike we Ashkenazim, we just like to be quiet. Okay, so what do you have here? One person was making the bracha for everybody. Let's say we all washed our hands, sat down to Hamotzi, and we all listened like we do on Shabbos. But most of us do it during the weekday. What if you do even on a Tuesday? You sit down for your pizza, one guy makes Hamotzi for everybody. What's the claim in bracha? Who would wash hands?
Only
the bracha reciter. In some ways, it brings an idea that if you're focused on Kedusha, it's almost like he's doing the Avoda, everybody else is just kind of the audience. So only the guy who's doing the avoda has the kedusha theme. But now there's a very nice split according to the Rashba. Why did the Gemara in Chulin not bring up brachot at all? Because it's not the same conversation. What's Chulin interested in? What is Chulin interested in? Why does everybody wash their hands? What's brachot interested in? Why does the mevarech have to wash their hands? So of course it's two separate conversations. Right, very, very nice Rashba. By the way, I think the Rashba is not crazy at all. Even in context, it works very nicely. Can you bring me a little bit of support for the Rashba if you think he's just being wacky to try to solve the problem? What phrase came up a bunch of times in Brachot there? Nope. I would go with a different phrase. Ah, very good. Who was that? Zach, way to go. Okay, what's the opening sentence there? What holds back? The Bracha. But even look at the drasha. What happens after v'yitim kadoshim as we're going along there? Ki kadosh Hashemen. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So I would say it's actually very good reading. The bracha theme seems pretty dominant in brachot. Maybe brachot is most interested in people make brachas having to wash their hands. And it's not interested in everybody having to wash their hands. And therefore, the brachot theme is separate from the chulin theme. Okay, who else had a hand up before? Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is exactly the same thing, but if everyone washes their hands because the Kohanim would wash their hands for Truma, they want to make sure they're clean, why wouldn't everyone wash their hands for Rakat Kohanim?
No, what's the difference between the two guys? Because in Birkat Kohanim, the Kohanim are still doing it. They don't have to keep in practice. They do it all the time. Certainly in Israel, they do it all the time. But what are we saying about the world of Truma? It doesn't exist. So no Kohen has washed his hands for Truma now, if I don't make up some number, for 1,700 years, right? So we need to keep in practice, so we all took it on, we all wash our hands for bread. Yargilu, what's Yargilu? To keep in practice, as it were. So, okay? Yeah.
What's the difference between, when you're saying it for other people, you're also saying it for yourself, and also in Kohen, it's just talking about when you're really just saying it for yourself, so really...
No, but basically we now understand why the themes don't come together. The Kedusha theme, according to the Rashba, is for someone who makes a bracha. He has to worry about the Kedusha theme. But the Srach Truma theme, or the Nakir theme, is relevant to everybody. So even if I'm being Yotzi with somebody else and not making a bracha, I still have to wash my hands. Okay? Yeah, Ben.
Why don't like only the Kohanim wash?
Excellent. That's a good question. I don't have a good answer for right now. In theory, we could have said... The minute could have dealt the way Ben just said. What are we going to say? All Kohanim wash their hands before eating bread. And then Kohanim stay in practice. It is interesting that somehow it developed into everybody does it. It's a good question. Good food for thought. Okay? We're good? Okay. Here we go. So, what? That's interesting whether like Zeich or Lemigdash and Kadesh Yargilu have the same thing or not. Okay, that's an interesting question. We're not for us right now. It's funny because usually we think about it from the other perspective. Like, if someone declares they're a Kohen, do we really think that's definitive proof that they're a Kohen? So that I'm used to. I'm not so used to the fact that, oh, every Yisrael maybe is really a Kohen. Okay, that I'm not so... Don't feel like that comes up so often in halacha. Okay, but that's an interesting point, David. Okay, now before we get to some... it's too much good stuff to do now. Where should we go? Should we go with a Lamdish Nafkamir now or interesting historical aside? What do you go with? Now go do the historical aside first. Okay. Everyone go to source 11 and 12. This is really remarkable. Okay. Now, there's a Masechet in Ezekiel called Idiot, which is very not such a famous Masechet, because it doesn't have a topic. What does the word mean, Idiot? It's just testimony. So it's different scholars testifying to halachot they're aware of. But at that point, there's no common theme. It's not like, oh, it's about Shabbat, it's about Kiddushin. Okay, it's about everything. But one of the interesting things there is, do you have kind of mavericks in the halachic system? Those that buck authority. There's got to be people who like people who buck authority. Right, so let's see, were there Tanaim like that? So we're going to see two of the interesting ones. Here we go. Akiva ben Mahalal Heir Abadvar. Remember we said, what's this whole Masechet about? Testifying to certain halachot, he testified halachot. Now, apparently, what was about all four halachot he testified about? They were against the rabbinic consensus. Jordan, you okay there? Yeah, you're a little tired. Okay, don't worry. We'll try to wake you up right now. Okay, you can try giving shir. It keeps you awake. It's great. It's a lot easier than listening. Okay, here we go. Now, these four things were all against the consensus. Amru akavya chazor b'chol b'arbat v'im. What did they say to him? Retract your four things. Shayita Omer, V'nascha Av Beitin Yisrael. Ah, a little incentive they threw in there. What did they say? If you stop being so maverick and bucking the consensus, we'll make you the Av Beitin. Okay. Amar Em, oh, what a mission, you gotta love it. Mutav li likare shote ko yamai, V'lo la'asot shachat rasha lefnei amakom. What does that mean? B'shvil srora chazarbo. I deny anyone to say I retracted because srora, anybody? Yeah, I went to power. Right now, I'm an idealist. I can't be bribed so easily. So that's already very interesting. Here, Akiva ben Mahalalel, the maverick, they offer him the abatin position. He says, nothing doing. Right? I don't give up my positions just to my halakhic positions. Just to get a position. Okay. Now, what happened at the end with this constant maverick? Okay. V'niduhu u'meid b'niduyav. First historical approach in the Mishnah, what happened? He was excommunicated. That eventually his fierce independence got in the way, and the rest of the rabbinic body excommunicated him. Okay. Next. V'sekla beit din arano. Am Rav Yehuda. Chas v'shalom sha'kav yinid nadeh. He just says it can't be. So I think it's also an interesting debate here, like to what degree they're willing to live with a maverick. Right? The first historical position is, oh, they actually had excommunicated this guy. And then who says nothing doing? No, he's too great. They would not have excommunicated him. Okay, so what happened? At Minido, so who did they in fact excommunicate? You got the whole story wrong. Eliezer ben Chanoch was a different guy. Akavya they lived with as being a maverick. Now, why did they excommunicate this fellow, Eliezer? Shepikpeik b'tarat yadayim. What did he quibble about? Ah, he did not like the idea of netil yadayim. Maybe he made fun of it. So maybe he wasn't a general maverick, but he was anti-netil yadayim. Now, here comes the interesting part here. I think it's already quite interesting. When do we tolerate mavericks? When don't we tolerate mavericks? This mission is certainly something that should be studied in that context. But here comes the interesting thing. The Mishnah does not say why this fellow Eliezer, why he was negative about Tar Yadayim. So my favorite parish in the Mishnah is by the Tiferet Yisrael of Yisrael Lipschitz, very interesting German Rav. Look what he says, guys. B'tar Yadayim, Shayadayim Yitzma'u, V'lo Kol Aguf. So I put out, this should make you happy. What was Eliezer ben Chanoch thinking? Yeah, you rabbis are cheating. I don't buy this. I'm at the right level. There's no such thing as my hands are tummy, but the rest of me is just fine. It does not exist. Tumah is a full-bodied experience. It is your total identity. Don't make up these crazy new categories. So apparently, I just think it's interesting, this fellow Eliezer who got in trouble, according to one version who was excommunicated, that's exactly what bothered him. Right? The reason he was negative and critical about this whole Netil Yadayim endeavor was precisely because the rabbis created a new category that didn't exist. Okay, so that's just an interesting historical aside in terms of authority and being a maverick and what bothered various chachamim. Yeah. No, but I think you're right. I think lurking in this mission is a really fascinating question. When do we say we respect your idealism and you can be a maverick and it's fine? When do you say, no, you're presenting, you're not willing to give in to rabbinic consensus and that's problematic? Yeah, I think it is interesting. Also interesting, like, you might be right, why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why we had a different attitude to Akavia than to this fellow Eliezer. It's also interesting, right? No, there's a lot of work here. You could write a whole interesting article about this Mishnah. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, even according to Rashi, even for the Rabotenu Rashi, you end up with this funny thing. Like, what does it mean your hands are tummy? Right? I mean, they agree that we have this, that's exactly the problem with Rabotenu Rashi. How does the halacha play out here? We treat your hands as being tummy. How do you deal with it? You wash them. So according to Rabotenu Rashi, it also doesn't make any sense, right? Even though we're creating some new category. Yeah. Oh, yeah, who else at hand? Yeah, Zach?
If you say, if you follow Rosh by saying it's because the hands are actually dirty, mm-hmm. it would be respectful, isn't there a problem with making a bracha and saying God's name for something that is added on? Like, before Shabbat...
Okay, very good, Zach.
I don't say bracha when I take a shower, even though I'm cleaning myself.
Okay, except... Okay, so Zach's right. There is a famous question. Should I be allowed to make bracha on mitzvot to Rabbanan? But once something is a formal mitzvah to Rabbanan, what do we say indeed in the halachic system? You can make a bracha. So I think the answer is, taking a shower is not a formal mitzvah to Rabbanan. But now we're saying, no, there's a formal mitzvah to Rabbanan. A Jew who eats bread should wash hands before it. Once it's a formal mitzvah to Rabbanan, it could have a bracha. Okay? Yeah, Zach.
Also, the mitzvah you could be blessed on is the
mitzvah
of, like, listening to
the rabbi. Okay, you want to hear something really amazing? Okay, these great guys, follow this way. All right, this is a fun topic. Okay? There's an amazing Yerushalmi. Okay, we don't pass this way, but we should. It'd be really cool. Okay, when we take, let's go back to what we're learning right now. When we take a lulav on day two, what bracha do we make? Asher kitshanu mistavit sivanu on the tivalav, right? The same bracha we made on day one. Once again, what does that show? We're willing to make brachot on mitzvot. There's a Yerushalmi that says, you know what bracha I should make? Asher kitshanu mistavit sivanu. Lishmoa calls Kenim. Is that great? Because what Yerushalmi is saying? No, the mitzvah I'm doing right now is not lulav per se. It's a pretty good argument, right? The mitzvah is listening to the rabbis. So that should be the text of the bracha. Now, granted, that's not what the Bavli says, and we don't do that, but I've often found it a very intriguing position. Since maybe what you're saying, right, Zach? Maybe that should actually be the bracha. Okay, tell Rav David you came up with that. Yeah. Okay, good. Very good. That's a good distinction. You're saying there might be a difference between the rabbis as extenders and the rabbis as innovators. Yeah, it's a reasonable distinction. Okay, let's get back to... Yeah, Tani.
Exactly. Should the Rashi that says that this is practice, what practice is this then? Because the guy didn't even point that the your full body's coming, your hands aren't coming.
No, but again, let's go with Rashi. According to Rashi, Rashi solved that problem. When the Kohanim are washing their hands, why does that make sense according to Rashi? That it's just hands? Guys, Rashi, not his rabbis. Because according to Rashi, we're not really figure tumming. We're just using Tumah V'Tahara categories to make sure. Remember, guys, what did Rashi say? Make sure you clean your hands. Right? So we want Kohanim. What happened when there was real Truma eating? We said, Kohanim, your hands are tummy. Wash them before you eat. But what was the reality? I know our portal's not happy. What was the reality? They're not tummy. It was just the means of getting them to wash their hands. So what do we do today? We don't have Kohanim eating truma. How do we keep in practice? We tell the Rav Am Yisrael, wash your hands before eating bread.
So practicing
Yeah. Okay. Everyone good there? Yeah.
Doesn't that like kind of excuse the means, like just trying to get to an end?
Well, that's what we're debating here. I was okay with it. Some of you seem to think the rabbis wouldn't do that. But by the way, notice, I would argue, Rabotenu Sarashi was on your side. Why does the Kiddush Rashi want to say you touch Tumah? Because they apparently think the only reason we use Tumah categories is because it's really about Tumah. But Rashi clearly doesn't think that way. Okay, we're good? Yeah? Okay. Well, let me do three more things. We're going to run out of time. Okay, you guys have been a lot of fun today. Well, wow, such a fun show. I didn't have to make jokes. You guys are just great. Okay, I didn't have to make fun of anybody. It was just entertaining without that. Okay, here we go. What? Okay. Okay, thank you. Well, we're hopeful. We're hopeful. Okay. What? Okay. We'll be okay. Okay. So, one good rule for life, guys, is that let's say you're a famous person and you don't like to publish, it might be a bad idea. Because you think, okay, I'm in control, but what's going to obviously happen if you don't publish? Someone else is going to publish your ideas. So even if you're, who should we go with here? Ari Eisen one day is a famous Detroit sports reporter. Okay, kind of a tough job, but okay. He's a famous Detroit sports reporter. But he might say, I'm a perfectionist. So since I'm a perfectionist, I'm not going to write all my great statistical analysis of the Detroit Tigers. Right? He's going to be the next Billy Bean. I'm not going to write it. But then his disciple's going to write it, so it's not helpful. So Ari, you write it yourself, okay? Okay, here we go. So that's what happened to Rav Soloveitchik. Okay, Rav Soloveitchik didn't like to publish very much. So what happened, of course? So a lot of his talmidim started to publish. So Rav Soloveitchik doesn't really have a parish on Shas, but there's a fine Talmid Chacham named Rabbi Reichman, right, the father of the one from Angolod. So he's published a number of his notes on the Rav Shirim. Now, if you ever see this phrase, Rishima Chirim, that's Rabbi Reichman on the Rav. So we're going to do it outside, but I think you'll find it really interesting. Okay, this first question is, you guys probably all had this question. I go out of the bathroom right before lunch. Let's say right now we're going to go to lunch. Let's say we go to the bathroom before lunch. So you have two different reasons you want to wash your hands, right? You're washing your hands because you left the bathroom, and you're washing your hands because you're going to have a sandwich for lunch. So can I do the two-for-one deal? Or do I say I can't? So Soloveitchik is very clever. What might it depend on? Well, clearly, what category is it when you wash your hands after the bathroom? I think we'd all agree that is Nikita. That's the cleanliness category. So Rav Soloveitchik says, oh, this is great. If I think washing your hands for food is really about Nikiyot, so then what should I say? Yeah. Two for one, why not? They're both accomplishing the same purpose. I just want to have clean hands. Excellent. But if I think, what if I throw in brachot? What if I think that washing hands before food is some element of Kedusha? That's a totally different thing. So then I might say, no, I should wash my hands in the bathroom to accomplish the Nikiyot. And there's a separate washing for the Kedusha. So that's one good nafkamina, which theme it is, right? Can it be integrated into the post-bathroom? But we have to say it's two separate things. One second. Okay, that's the first thing he says. Then Rav Soloveitchik has another very, very powerful lundish thing. He says, how should I view washing your hands in front of the Tehillim? There's two ways to view it. One way to view it is I'm fulfilling a mitzvah asay. There's a mitzvah asay. What should I do? Wash your hands before bread. The other way to view it is I'm trying to avoid an isser. How could I formulate this halakha? It is usher to eat bread without washing your hands. Right? Should I think of it more along the lines of a mitzvah asay, or more along the lines of a mitzvah lo tasay? It's a reasonable question, right? Okay, now he has two, this is good for life, guys. What are good test cases? He says, you want to grant test cases whether something's an asay or lo tasay? Oh, who said that? That's very good. Onain is a great test case. Remember, I think we discussed it once, right? We discussed it this year. Who's an Onain? Between death and burial, there's a fasting halacha, you're actually exempt from mitzvah. Halacha gives you a dispensation, it's such a difficult time, a person just lost their close relative, they're patur from mitzvah until you bury the deceased. But, obviously, which mitzvah are you patur from? Asay. We're not going to tell you, oh, you could kill and steal, now you're an Onain. We'll say you don't have to daven, you don't have to make brachot, that makes sense. Ah, so Ari Portal's right. That's a great test case. What should I ask now? Can an Onan eat bread without washing hands? If I view it essentially as a mitzvah asay, the answer should be, yeah. If I say, no, it's really an isser to eat bread without washing your hands, the answer should be, he has to wash his hands. Okay, so Onan would be a good test case, very good. But then the Rav Soloveitchik at the end argues that in classic Brisker fashion, actually, you know what? It's both. There's no reason it can't be both themes. It is both a mitzvah asay and an isser. And he very cleverly proves it. What might be another way of establishing whether a mitzvah is say or an iser? The fact that you make a bracha. Very good. You guys who understand the world. We tend to think about it, guys. It's hard to think of any iser you make a bracha on. Do you make a bracha on not eating treif? Do you make a bracha on not being mechal Shabbos? Bracha tend to go with mitzvah asay. So at that point, he says, if you make a bracha, apparently, it's mitzvah asay. But then he says, no, I was really excited to find this. I did not know this before this week. Some of you may have heard that sometimes you're on a teal and you don't have water anywhere. And if there's no water close by, what are you allowed to do? Just make sure that you don't touch the bread. Right? You might have been told this. Like, if there's no water within 2 miles of you, just hold the bread in your, you know, your chad pami, I'm losing my disposable bag, and eat it that way. Okay? But the Rav says something very interesting. What's his claim? That when I do that, I'm actually not fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to wash. So therefore, why am I doing it? Because at least I'm avoiding the issur. So that's pretty clever. Once I say there's two themes, there could be a scenario where I fulfill one theme and not the other. But what's a good nafkamina? This is also very clever. When I did that, what would I not do? Oh, there you go. So I got all of that beautifully. So that was a Soloveitchik being a great lambin. Before I take final comments, notice the two things he pointed out. Number one, what theme it is might depend whether I could do the two-for-one deal. If I go with the Nikiot theme again, it could be integrated, leaving the bathroom and washing for bread are one and the same. If I go with the Kedusha theme, they're two separate things. Maybe I would then require two separate acts of washing. Okay, next question. Is this an assay or more of a lotasay? So he says, well, the bracha, and Ari Patel's right, one classic test case would be onin. Onin is a good test case. And perhaps bracha is a good test case. Well, if we make a bracha, obviously there's an element of mitzvah asay at work here. There's a form of asay, so we make a bracha. But wait, says the Rav, but there's another model. There's a model where I hold it in a bag. Says the Rav, what am I doing there? I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah was meant to be actual act of washing. I'm avoiding the problem. That shows you that there's two themes. There's this asay theme and there's this avoid the iser theme. And that's why when I did that, it would work, but I would not make the bracha. So that is a clever split that Rav Soloveitchik works out. Okay, now comments or questions. Yeah, David.
So what do we say the actual reason is that wash our hands?
Okay, so I'm going to sum up the whole thing in 1 second. But I think we're left with a little bit of attention. Because in theory, there are three different themes that work here.
Do we have like practical halakha based off one of those that we like follow?
I'm not sure we can get to it in a second. Yeah, JJ. It is, except for one thing, guys. Rav David loves this. So this is Rav David, you will definitely get to at some point this year. There's a fascinating phenomenon. This really is worth analyzing, actually, because I know of like five different theories. We tend to make bracha on a mitzvah asay. Which mitzvah asay do we not tend to make bracha on? Benam l'chaveiro. It's hard not to notice that there's no bracha for staka, kibud aveim, gnur chasarim, bikur cholim. So there's definitely something lurking there. Just if you have any theories, come on to me later. I'm aware of five different theories. Okay, why we don't make bracha to mitzvah benam l'chadero? Okay, so that's an. Yeah. That's a clever question. Is an onin pater from asays of benam l'chadero? I would think the answer is yes. So that's a very clever question.
By any time you would violate
No, but don't forget. Remember, we lived this together. Actually, remember the Maritz Chayes about staka. He wanted to know how could osik mitzvah apply to staka if there's a lotasay. And he said that the lotasay. Who said this? Maritz Chayes. Somebody said this. The lotasay was fueled by the asay. Oh, it was the Gilin Hashas. Very good, Aaron Pruvin. Very good, guys. When you study for the final, the guy to cheat off is Aaron Pruvin. Okay, he remembers everything. Okay, so correct. It was the Gilin Hashas. But that would, Ari, in that case, would work, right? Maybe he's pater from, let's say an onain is being called by its stucker company. It could be he now is allowed to ignore it. And even though there's a lotasay, the lotasay only is a function of the assay, right? According to that, it would work out. Okay, you don't seem happy. Okay, yeah, I see. It is true that in the Agadah Masechet Shabbat, Hillel translates the positive into the negative formulation. That is true. But that doesn't make it like a concrete Isser, though. Yeah? You're too agotic. JJ, you're an agotic fanatic. Yeah. It's a great problem to have. He didn't publish that much philosophy either, by the way. In his life, the things that came out are Halachic Man, Lonely Man of Faith, Uvi Kashta Misham, and a few small articles. Okay? Those are the few small articles, and Lonely Man of Faith, and Confrontation. Sorry. Look, even if you're reluctant to publish, reluctant doesn't mean like it's you're not going to publish anything. It's just reluctance. Okay, last summer, guys, I'm not going to get to everything, but it's okay. Quick summary. Okay, why did they say that, we'll start with Sefer Torah. Why did they make a Sefer Torah a source of Tumah? Because people were keeping Truma together with the Torah scrolls. That's why when Chazal wanted to say if something's part of the canon, what do they say? Is it Metame? You're dying. Okay, great. Next, why did they make a Gzeira that hands are a source of Tumah? Your hands are busy. How did Rashi take that? What are you touching? Dirty stuff. How did Rabbi Tenu Shalashi take it? Tumah. Why is Rashi a major advantage over Rabbi Tenu? Because if you actually became Tumah, it's not about your hands. It's a full-bodied experience. Okay, great. Now that's Truma. Let's get to Chulin. In Masechet Chulin, what are the two reasons you might have to wash your hands before bread? First, Srach Truma, we're keeping everybody in practice for Truma. What did Tosfos throw in? Nikia cleanliness. The Gemara in Brachot seemed to have a different theme. What was the Gemara in Brachot's theme? Kedusha. Excellent. According to the Rashba, why is there no conflict whatsoever? The Rashba, it's not the same topic. Brachot was only interested in the guy who made the bracha. But if you disagree with that, then you really do have multiple themes, and it has halakhic implications. What is one possible implication according to Rav Soloveitchik? Is the theme Kedusha or is the theme Nikiyot? Possible implication? Can you do the two for one when you leave the bathroom? Okay, I'm not going to review the other rough thing because we just did it. Last point. Where did this interestingly play a role later in Jewish history? So we saw in Aviyot, there was a whole question about a bunch of mavericks, right? Did they excommunicate Akavya? But what did Rabbi Yehuda insist? Akavya, he was too great. They didn't excommunicate him. Who did they excommunicate? What did Eliezer say? He was critical of Tyre Dime. According to Tiferet Yisrael, why was he critical? There's no such thing. You made up an entity that doesn't exist. Tuma is full-bodied, full identity, not hands. So it could be this whole debate we've had, can we make up new categories to accomplish our own purposes? Maybe that debate is really lurking right there in the second Idiot. All right, everybody should have a wonderful Shabbat. Ah, I'm here for Shabbos. Good.
When we don't,
can we just shut this?
Thanks.